well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with Lee Williams from the Second Amendment Foundation's Investigative Journalism Project about the Brian Malinowski case out of Arkansas. You remember, this was the raid that the ATF conducted along with local law enforcement last month against Brian Malinowski and his home there. Malinowski's was the executive director of the airport in Little Rock, Arkansas. He was also under investigation for being engaged in the business of selling firearms without an FFL. While the investigation itself may have been on the up and up, there are a lot of questions about how the raid was conducted. It took place in the early morning hours. Malinowski was shot during the raid. An ATF official or ATF agent was shot as well. It's unclear whether or not that was a injury caused by Malinowski or perhaps one of the other agents. Local law enforcement is investigating, but the family believes that Malinowski thought that he was responding to home invaders, which is why he had a firearm, which is why he may have fired at the agents who would burst through his door. So far, we've seen no sign that the agents announced themselves, although we have not seen all of the body cam footage that should have been recorded at the time. The family's attorneys released some Ring doorbell camera footage showing an agent covering up that doorbell camera with tape, but nowhere do you hear any of the agents announce themselves as a law enforcement before the door is breached. Again, the Arkansas Attorney General is now weighing in on this case, and Lee is writing about it at The Gun Writer. He joins us on the program to talk about the latest developments in the Malinowski case. Take a look and a listen. Lee, thanks so much for joining me on the show today. It's good to see you, sir.
Oh, my pleasure. Appreciate it. It's been a while since we've spoken.
It has been. Well, I'm glad you're here today, and I'm really glad that you are staying on top of what's going on with the Brian Malinowski story, this situation in Arkansas, the executive director of the Little Rock Airport under investigation for being engaged in the business, right, of selling firearms without a license. And yet, in response to this investigation into a nonviolent possessory offense, the ATF launches this armed raid at Malinowski's home. Malinowski is shot, passes away from his injuries 2 days later. An ATF agent is apparently shot as well. And there are a lot of questions, Lee, about why this went down the way that it did. Why was there this, massive armed presence at Malinowski's doorstep? Did they announce themselves ahead of time? And what were the other options available, to the ATF, right, rather than this, full frontal assault? What are you learning? What's the latest that you're learning here in this case?
Well, we have a story that published today that has some comments from the Attorney General, the Arkansas Attorney General, Tim Griffin. He seems to be pro-gun, pro-civil rights. He's been endorsed by gun groups when he was in Congress. He can't get his hands on the body cam footage that ATF agents allegedly wore when they went in the house. Now, subsequent to that, I was in contact with his press folks today, and I sent them a bunch of questions. So we're going to hopefully have another interview with him coming soon. I think he is the second state law enforcement official to express some outrage and some intensive interest and want to give the ATF a little bit of scrutiny after the raid they did in Oklahoma. Very similar. They hit it with a SWAT team. Thank God nobody was killed or injured. But I got to tell you, brother, after that one, which was last year, we predicted that if ATF is going to continue sending out their SWAT teams willy-nilly, unsupervised, that someone was going to get killed. And then, 8 months later, Mr. Malinowski is shot to death in his own home. Obviously, everybody that understands what happens knows that he's not going to go out and shoot federal agents. He thought he was protecting himself and his wife from an armed home invasion. Taking a 30,000-foot view from this, this is all attributable to two things, in my humble opinion. One, you've got ATF leadership, and I put leadership in finger quotes. They're obsessed with their SWAT team. They're obsessed with their special operations guys. They're a hammer, and all they see are gun owners as nails. And two, and I think you can attest to this too, ATF has always had a complete disregard for the sanctity of human life. having been in law enforcement, having studied deadly force, having used deadly force, having conducted search warrants, I can tell you, you have to make them as safe as possible for everybody concerned, including the suspect. Okay. Right. There are options that they had here that anybody with any common sense, much less tactical sense, should have used. I mean, they knew where this guy worked. He was the airport director. He was the executive director. They could have gone to his office and said, "Hey, we got a search warrant for your home. Let's go." They could have stopped him on the way to or from work easily, pulled him over, said, "Hey, we got a search warrant. Let's go do it." They could have, you know, if they felt the need to confront him at his home, what I would have done, I would have ring the house with a perimeter and then done a call out. You know, yeah. They had a cell number. They had a search warrant for his phone, or use a bullhorn. "Hey, come on out." But simply put, they could have knocked on his door and waited until he answered. And that's probably what should have happened. But yeah. You know, they're obsessed with this. And his attorney pointed out what I thought was a pretty trenchant thought. Let's say all these allegations against him were true. Let's say he was convicted of all these allegations, which we'll never know, obviously, because he's not here to answer to these allegations. He wouldn't have seen the inside of a jail or a prison. He would have gotten probation or probably pretrial, some type of pretrial diversion, where this would have come off his record. This is a process crime.
Right. You know, and I spoke with the retired ATF Deputy Assistant Director Pete Frizzelli about this. And, you know, and he brought up all of the things that you brought up. You know, why not? And again, he's got lots of experience in these types of investigations, right? And he said, "Well, yeah, why wouldn't you just, you know, have a local cop initiate a traffic stop on his way to work, serve him with a warrant, come on, turn around, let's go back." He talked about, you know, the airport being a sterile environment. So you've got, you know, an airport executive, right? He's there in his corner office, not likely to, attack law enforcement officers if a warrant is served there. And as you said, this sort of, you know, call and announce, right? Or surround and announce, where you surround the house, you inform them, "Hey, we're outside, come on out. We've got a search warrant to search your home." There were, as you say, multiple options that could have been deployed here. And we don't know why the ATF decided, "Well, now let's just, you know, bum rush the front door. That's the strategy we're going to deploy." And of course, the ATF's not saying anything about this, right?
Right. What gets me is you use a no-knock search warrant has its place, but it's very rare. You no-knock if you're concerned he's going to destroy evidence. If he's suspected of having a couple ounces of coca, okay, which he could flush down the toilet, no-knock. But, you know, guns, records, phones, there's no way he could have destroyed any evidence. So, and I see this when federal officials, federal agents try and do real police work. You know, they're always in a big hurry. What's the hurry? Knock on the door, let them come down. "Hey, we're here. We're going to search your home." What is the hurry? What are they afraid of? You know, I think they've been watching too many SWAT episodes or Navy SEAL shows. They feel that, you know, they're starting to see us, Cam, and this is concerning to me, as the enemy.
Yeah.
And
well, and you know, and to add to that, Lee, I mean, one of the concerns that I have, because I think that you're right. I mean, when you listen, the ATF has had its problems long before Joe Biden took office. Right. But, you know, the Biden administration really has done its best to turn the ATF into a gun control group with law enforcement powers.
Right. We've never seen anything this bad before.
We have not. And so you take that attitude, right, that you talk about seeing gun owners as the enemy. Then you add in things like, you know, these very vague and fuzzy rules that gun owners don't know if they're in compliance with federal law because right. the ATF won't right. tell them, right? Right? Including this new vague and fuzzy standard about who is engaged in the business that's set to go into effect in a couple of months, where the ATF says, "Well, you don't even have to sell a gun for us to say that you should have an FFL. As long as you're offering up one for sale and maybe you've got some others for sale and you intend to make some sort of profit off of it, I mean, yeah, that could be a federal felony if you don't have your FFL. So I'm worried that we're going to see an exponential growth in these types of raids against people who are marginal cases at best, right? Right. I mean, when you look at the affidavit that was filed for the search warrant, you know, ATF says that they had Malinowski under surveillance for a couple of months. They had, you know, watched him buy and resell guns in as little as 24 hours. You know, there was some evidence in the affidavit. And again, I don't know if this is true or not,
Right.
Because we also have this ATF case out of South Carolina where they showed up at a guy's house or at a guy's work, arrested him, took him into custody, charged him with, I think, felonies that would have accounted to 119 years behind bars. And then hours later said, oh, we got the wrong guy.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm even cautious about, you know, just relying on the details in this affidavit. But for the sake of argument, let's say that those things were true. There probably would have been enough then to launch an active investigation. But what right. happens now if it's, well, we saw somebody, you know, at the gun show and, you know, he had a table and he had four guns there. I think that makes him a gun dealer. Right. So let's go start surveilling him. Let's show up at his home at 6 o'clock in the morning, unannounced. And we could see this happen for almost every gun owner in the country who might dare sell a firearm from their personal collection.
I think you nailed it. And it scares the hell out of me. One of the things I asked the Arkansas Attorney General was if he is going to contact the U.S. attorney there and ask and request some type of moratorium on these type of raids. Until the questions, at least in Arkansas, until these type of questions can be worked out, I think our Congress critters would be the perfect people to pressure ATF into maybe having some type of self-instituted moratorium on these type of raids, because they clearly don't know what they're doing. And somebody else, and I hate to be right, somebody else is going to get killed. I mean, Malinowski was shot twice in the head with a carbine after he, you know, I'm sorry, this bugs the hell out of me, because having done these type of raids and having done them correctly, there's so many factors you have to take into account, Cam. And they just, you know, I think their due diligence, I don't know if they did any here. I mean, the overriding concern when you're talking about deadly force is the sanctity of human life. All of the rules that we have regarding the law enforcement use of deadly force are predicated upon the sanctity of human life. And quite frankly, I just don't think ATF gives a damn. They don't care.
Yeah. I mean, that's certainly the impression that you get, right? Now, the good news is that the ATF's not investigating itself.
Correct. Here,
right? And that's correct. Important.
Well, when a law enforcement officer, regardless of whether or not they're federal, state, or local, uses deadly force, there are two investigations that take place. One is internal, which ATF will do an internal review to determine whether or not the agent adhered to policy. I think the results of that investigation are going to be a foregone conclusion. Yeah. They'll find he did, you know, he'll get an award or promotion. And then the local law enforcement, be it in this case, the Arkansas State Police Criminal Investigation Division, is conducting an investigation whether or not to charge this yet unnamed agent with homicide. And the results of their investigation, thank God, go to a state prosecutor, not a federal one. And hopefully the attorney general, who seems to be a little bit pissed about ATF's lack of response to him, mm-hmm. will have some input in that investigation. This man did not need to die. Now, is that a murder charge? Is that a homicide? Is that a manslaughter charge? I don't know. But this guy does not need to be dead.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you mentioned Griffin's not been able to get a hold of the ATF body cam footage. Do you know, has the Arkansas State Police been able to obtain that footage?
I don't know yet. And quite frankly, Cam, I don't know if they wore body cams. I've watched that video. There's a little video snippet mm-hmm. that they have before ATF covered up the ring cam with a piece of tape.
Which, why would you do that? Right. Yeah.
You want as much documentation of your raid as possible, unless there's something you want to hide. And I can't see whether or not they're wearing body cams. They are carrying a body bunker, though. Okay. They're ready for war. First guy's got a body bunker. Overkill. And pardon the pun. And I mean no disrespect to the Malinowski family. But again, he should not be dead.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, Lee, I'm with you. I mean, there are just so many disturbing details about this case. Again, given what the ATF is doing to expand the definition of who is engaged in the business, which was the, you know, the quote unquote crime that Malinowski was accused of committing. I think that there is grave cause for concern. And I'm with you. I want to see Congress. Yeah. Talk about this. I mean, I'm glad to see the Attorney General in Arkansas is on this, but, you know, Steve Dettelbach needs to be hauled in front of the House Oversight Committee and at least ask these questions. I'm sure that he will dissemble and will not provide a straight answer. But But these questions need to be on the record. They need to be in public. And more people need to know about what's going on with this agency right now.
And I just wonder how many SWAT team raids, for lack of a better word, ATF has conducted that we don't know about.
Right. Okay.
How many FFLs, like the case in Oklahoma, Mr. Fincher, they yelled and screamed at him for an hour before he, quote unquote, voluntarily relinquished his FFL. And then they had magically had the form right there in their pocket, including a couple extras, where he voluntarily signed away his FFL. How many of those raids do we not know about? How many of these guys feel like they're embarrassed that they did something wrong? And unfortunately, and I'll say it again, if they continue, it's only going to be a matter of time before someone else is killed or seriously wounded, because they do not know what they're doing. They do not know how to minimize risk for the suspect, for the subject, or for their own agents.
Yeah. Lee, listen, I cannot thank you enough for coming on the show. And again, I'm so glad that you are on top of this story. You do amazing work. If folks have not checked out Lee's website, Gunwriter, thegunwriter.substack.com. Also go to the Second Amendment Foundation's Investigative Journalism Project at saf.org. But you're doing incredible work in bringing these stories to light, Lee. And again, I cannot thank you enough for what you do. We've got to have you back on more often, because really what you're doing is just groundbreaking.
My pleasure. And thanks for the kind words, Cam.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll do this again soon. Thanks, Lee.
My pleasure.
My thanks to Lee for joining me on the program. We're going to continue following this case, bring you any details and developments as the investigation into the raid in Brian Malinowski's home continues. Before we get to today's armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, let's talk about this for just a second. At the very heart of our democracy lies a principle that we hold sacred: free speech. It's the cornerstone that supports every freedom we cherish. Yet in today's digital age, discussions about our wealth, our rights, and our future are being silenced or overshadowed in mainstream narratives, leaving many people feeling voiceless in conversations that are crucial to our financial independence and security. That's where Wealth Protection Research steps in, armed with a mission that's never been more critical. Wealth Protection Research is not a financial advisory firm. They're defenders of free speech, committed to giving a voice to the silenced. And Wealth Protection Research does tirelessly seek out financial experts. And these are the voices that challenge prevailing narratives, especially as we navigate the uncertainties of the 2024 election. Wealth Protection Research has created a 2024 Election Wealth Protection Report. Now, this free report highlights the three best ideas for protecting and growing your money heading into the 2024 election. It contains ideas the mainstream media won't touch. Listeners can get it completely free. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. If you believe in the sanctity of free speech and the importance of financial freedom, then act now. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy of this 2024 Election Protection Report. It's time to widen the scope of what we're told, to hear the ideas the establishment doesn't think you can handle, and to take control of our financial destinies. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. All right, so let's start with today's recidivist report. And this one, I got to say, it is slightly infuriating, but there is also a bit of good news to be found in this recidivist report, which is rare for these stories, right? Here's the headline: Judge orders teen shooting suspect back into custody after mom reports release violation. That's got to be a really tough thing to do as a parent, right? To inform the authorities that, hey, my kid is not abiding by the terms of their release. But good for mom, because if you want to, you know, steer your kid in a different direction, unfortunately, this is what you got to do sometimes. This 15-year-old, along with a 14-year-old, are facing robbery and assault charges. They're accused of shooting a bystander near a grocery store parking lot as they fled after the alleged robbery. They're not being named because, again, they are considered minors in this case. But online court records show that the 15-year-old was placed on electronic monitoring, not held until trial, but released with a, you know, ankle bracelet, basically, and was told, you know, you can go to school, you can go home. That's it. Maybe grandma's house, a couple of permitted residences. But according to teen's mom, he lied about where he was going. He said he was going to grandma's house, and instead he took off and went to his girlfriend's house. The teen's mom explained to the judge, my understanding is that he beelined to his girlfriend's house and then to grandma's house, and I called his probation officer. She said, I'm not happy with his decision. I'm not okay with it. Now, according to authorities, Back on November 20th of last year, the 15-year-old and the 14-year-old were caught on surveillance footage robbing a woman at gunpoint in the parking lot of a grocery store. Shots were then fired when somebody intervened. A bystander named Terry was injured and actually lost an eye. Terry was in court asking that the judge put the 15-year-old in secure detention, saying, quote, "I have a fake eye because of this kid, and I'm still trying to get my life on track from what he did." You know, it's amazing to me, first of all, that this teen was released on electronic monitoring. He was charged with two counts of first-degree assault, two counts of first-degree robbery, two counts of second-degree taking a motor vehicle without permission. The 14-year-old facing similar charges. But still, a commissioner in Pierce County, Karen Watson, released the 15-year-old on electronic home monitoring in early March. There is a juvenile facility. The 14-year-old was sent to that juvenile facility, but the 15-year-old, who's accused of taking part in the exact same crime, again, released into the custody of his mom with an ankle monitor, which is just a bizarre thing to do. Now, again, I'm glad that mom sounds like she's doing her best to keep her kid on the straight and narrow. But again, why wasn't this 15-year-old simply placed in juvenile custody to begin with, along with his alleged accomplice? Today's Armed Citizen story. Newport News, California, where police say a homeowner shot and injured an intruder, a second suspect, apparently dead from a self-inflicted injury outside of the home. It's a bizarre story. It happened early on the morning of April 16th. Two suspects, again, entering this home in Newport News. It's about 4:45 in the morning. According to police, the two suspects enter the home in what they believe was a targeted attack, although we don't know why this particular residence was targeted. But the homeowner did have a firearm, was able to defend himself and other members of the family that were inside the home at the time. One of the suspects suffered multiple gunshot wounds, was found outside of the residence in possession of a firearm, taken into custody. Non-life-threatening injuries, according to authorities. Officers began looking for the second suspect, and they found him passed away in some bushes outside of the home, apparently with a self-inflicted wound to the head. Police said that there were four people inside the home when the apparent home invasion took place: a man, two women, and a child. It's unclear at this point who fired the shots, but they are not expected to face any charges. In fact, I thought this was an interesting quote from the mayor of Newport News, Mayor Will O'Neill, who said the outcome of the attempted home invasion should serve as a warning. Said, quote, "I can tell you right now, if you come into Newport News to commit a crime, we will defend ourselves. And today is an example of that." Well, I maybe the strongest statement in support of the right of self-defense that I've heard from a Southern California mayor, to be quite honest. The problem, of course, is that while that is hopefully true in theory, California makes it damn difficult for people to actually exercise their right to keep and bear arms in self-defense, right? You've got to go through all kinds of hoops. You've got to wait 10 days before you can simply bring your firearm home. If you want a concealed carry license, you want to be able to protect yourself in public. And Orange County is better than a lot of other counties, to be sure. But again, depending on where in the state of California you live, it can either be somewhat of a challenge to exercise your Second Amendment rights, or it can be nearly impossible to do so. And unfortunately, I think there are a lot of good people who are denied their ability to protect themselves because of the gun control regime in California. Glad it wasn't the case in Newport News. We'll keep our eyes on this story and bring any more information as it becomes available. Finally today, in the right place, at the right time, while unable to do the right thing, a Colorado man, former volunteer firefighter, who was able to save the day when he came across a fiery wreck on the road just the other day. This is, again, a frightening situation, but thankfully, this individual, Alec Larson, and a lot of other Good Samaritans, too, it should be noted, were in the right place at the right time, and were willing and able to do the right thing, even at the risk of their own safety. So Larson is driving down Highway 82 near Carbondale, Colorado. It was last Thursday, and he comes across this wreck. He could see that there was a woman who was trapped inside the car. So he said, "I grabbed a pair of scissors." That was my first thought. He actually you know, as a volunteer firefighter, had to try to rescue and extricate people from car crashes before, and he had been unable to get them out of their seatbelt. So he wanted to have the scissors to cut through the seatbelt. He said, when I opened the driver's side door, there was a woman. I just grabbed her. I put her on the ground. And then he noticed that a fire had started underneath the vehicle. But the woman is yelling at him, there's a baby in the car. And he said, that's when the shock set in. He said, 5 years ago, my daughter passed away here in the valley. And it was from circumstances that I couldn't really control. This time, Alec Larson said he could do something. And he did. The airbags of the car were blocking the back seat, so he ended up crawling in through the hatchback to get the baby. He said he seemed perfectly fine. I grabbed him, came out of the back of the 4Runner. So now mom and baby are both safe, but there's another car involved in this crash. The driver seriously injured at this point, but Larson and other first responders, including some Good Samaritans who were just driving by and stopped to help, were able to safely get him out of the car. As they were doing so, the 4Runner, where the mom and the baby had been, that just exploded into flames at that point. He said it was an oil fire. Burns really slow. Gas tank on a vehicle is usually in the back. So we knew he had some sort of time before the fire reached all the way to the back of the vehicle where the tank would be. He said it was really just more of a general understanding of how fire works, which is great, right? But in that moment, I mean, you don't have a stopwatch. You don't know how long it's going to be before the gas tank might explode. He said, you know, it really just comes down to whether you're scared or not. He said, it's more about making sure you at least try to do something. And he did, along with those other Good Samaritans, Alec Larson, saving 3 lives that day in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing and changing. And saving a lot of lives in the process. So tip of the cap to Alec for a very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam & Company. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. However, we're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. Maybe even digging into a little Second Amendment history. That was my VIP story yesterday, taking a look at Bleeding Kansas and the right to keep and bear arms. If you want to check that out, all you have to do, go to BearingArms.com/subscribe, use the promo code SAVEAMERICA. You can get a significant savings on your VIP or VIP Gold membership. Not only will you get exclusive content like some history stories and latest, you know, litigation news, as well as other exclusive content and analysis, you're going to get that warm, fuzzy feeling of knowing you're supporting the independent pro-Second Amendment journalism we're doing. And that's important, right? Well, we certainly do thank you for your support. Glad to see you with us here today. Look forward to be back with you again here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.